Seasonal affective disorder is a type of depression characterized by a recurrent seasonal pattern with symptoms lasting approximately 4 to 5 months. The signs and symptoms of seasonal affective disorder are similar to major depression, but they tend to differ from major depressive disorder because they are seasonal, either in a winter pattern or a summer pattern seasonal affective disorder. Not every single person with seasonal affective disorder experiences the same symptoms, but they may feel depressed most of the day, nearly every day, lose interest in activities that they once loved, changes in appetite, changes in body weight, having problems with sleep, feeling sluggish or agitated, low energy, feeling hopeless or worthless, having difficulties concentrating, or having thoughts of death or suicide. We also know that the winter pattern of seasonal affective disorder may include oversleeping, overeating, and feelings like you're hibernating, where you're withdrawing from social scenarios. In summer patterns, people may have insomnia, poor appetite leading to weight loss, restlessness and agitation, anxiety, and potentially even violent behavior. My guest today is Dr. John LaPuma, and he has had an extraordinary career. First, he became an internist, then he went to culinary school, and he has now started a regenerative certified organic educational farm in Santa Barbara, California. We talk today about seasonal affective disorder, how it affects people, who's most vulnerable, and whether or not nature may just be the solution that can help us overcome depressive environments and depressive situations. Let's get to the show. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Dr. John LaPuma is a medical physician and is the New York Times best-selling author of 7 books that have been translated into 10 different languages with over 1 million copies sold. He is the co-founder of ChefMD, a consumer health media company, and he is considered to be the founder of culinary medicine, which is now taught in 40% of U.S. medical schools worldwide. He is the founder of ecomedicine.org, a nature-based approach to optimal well-being and aging. Dr. LaPuma has lectured on nature therapy and culinary medicine at Harvard University, the University of Chicago, Stanford University, TEDMED and TEDx, as well as Kaiser Permanente and Aboard the World. With Lisa Gibbons and Joan London, Dr. LaPuma co-hosted the national cable weekly series Health Corner, which was underwritten by Walgreens, for Lifetime TV for over 5 years and 120 episodes. He has published over 60 peer-reviewed scientific papers, 3 medical books, and hundreds of other works. Dr. LaPuma focuses on helping patients connect with nature as a way of enhancing wellness, preventing and treating medical problems, and creating more joy in their lives. He has identified nature deficit disorder as a clinical problem and created the comfortnaturequiz.com to help people identify their comforting places in nature, as well as the SAD quiz as a way of detecting seasonal affective disorder. He considers outdoors to be an outpatient clinic with the ability to help people live, feel, and look years younger. Dr. LaPuma currently stewards a biodiverse, regenerative, certified organic educational farm in Santa Barbara, California. Dr. John LaPuma, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Lindsay Elmore, I know where I'd rather be.
Oh, you are so kind. I have been so excited about this conversation because you and I feel like, have so much in common. We understand that the way that we eat and the way that we engage with nature has a huge influence over our overall health. And so today we're going to focus and talk about seasonal affective disorder. So let's start out just by talking about what is it, who is vulnerable, and how does it get triggered?
Seasonal affective disorder is a type of depression which occurs at the same time every year and affects one out of 20 people in the northern half of America, and women actually 4 to 1 over men, according to new NIH data. Many people don't know they have this seasonal affective disorder. So I created sadquiz.com, which in just 3 minutes can tell you your risk and get you help if you need it.
Okay. So tell us, so we know that women are more vulnerable, and who else is more vulnerable to seasonal affective disorder?
Anybody who lives north of the line drawn between Atlanta, or maybe even Birmingham, where you are, and Los Angeles, which is near where I am. And above that line, you don't make very much vitamin D between November and March. And you begin to have not just a short day length in winter, but also your body's circadian clock sort of slows down. And that's why this happens, because as your circadian clock slows down, you make more melatonin and your serotonin level also drops. And all that adds up to what many people know as the winter blues. But it's not so innocuous as that for many people. It's actually, as I said, a form of depression. Mm-hmm. And as a form of depression, it can be disabling and quite serious.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember I lived in Europe for a while, or in the UK, and traveled to Scandinavia often. And I just would talk to people. I'm like, how do you deal with being in the dark so many hours a day? And a social media follower yesterday said that her physician told her that nobody should supplement with vitamin D because vitamin D acts like a hormone and you can overdose on it. And I was like twitching over here, just like everybody in the United States is deficient in vitamin D. And so, you know, and I love what you said about when your circadian rhythms get off, your melatonin gets off, your serotonin gets off, because I love the acknowledgement that everything is connected. And so you mentioned sadquiz.com. How does this help people to people identify that they have seasonal affective disorder? Like, what is it designed for, and who should go take that quiz?
It's designed for, I wrote it, so that people could know the likelihood that they have seasonal affective disorder. Mm-hmm. I mean, many people these days are anxious and depressed and fatigued and sometimes sleeping too much and have low energy. And that can be, those mean signs of a different mental health problem, or it can be a situational thing. But if you live above the line drawn between, let's say, Birmingham and Santa Barbara, because that's where we are, or more conventionally, Atlanta and Los Angeles, you are at risk for this seasonal affective disorder, this type of depression that occurs most frequently when there is less sunlight. And interestingly, some people have a seasonal affective disorder in summer. Their circadian rhythms are off in summer, although it's a very small percentage. It is a seasonal problem. It does occur in some people who have warm climates, and the short day length is the trigger, no matter where you are.
Okay, so short day length is what is primarily the trigger, but why is it that women are so disproportionately affected when both men and women are experiencing these seasonalities basically at the same time?
That's right. And actually, that's not very well understood. But some researchers think that it's reduced sunlight can affect serotonin levels, and that fluctuating estrogens, which women have and men don't have as much, also affect serotonin.
Okay, so it's also because of just the complexity in the hormonal fluctuations that are taking place in women. Now, you know, are there good treatments for seasonal affective disorder? I mean, I'm sure some of our listeners have heard of light therapy or have heard of using antidepressants for this. What's kind of your favorite go-tos that help to treat seasonal affective disorder?
Well, the first thing is light therapy. Light therapy ought to be tried first in almost all people, unless you're severely depressed, and then you need to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist right away. But light therapy is not like tanning lights or other types of lights, ultraviolet lights or full spectrum lights. It's a very specific bright light that you need a minimum of 10,000 lux, which is super bright. And I have patients positioned at about 2 feet from their eyes in the morning, just off to the side, and read for 30 minutes. And that helps to reset the chemicals in your brain that make you think essentially that it's more like summer. So bright light therapy actually is remarkably effective. It's not a pharmaceutical, obviously, but as I said, it mimics natural outdoor light and appears to cause a change in the brain chemicals that are linked to mood. Now, if you have bipolar disorder, or you're hypomanic or manic, and you ought to not try bright light therapy, or for that matter, Wellbutrin or bupropion, the generic, until you talk to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, because both of those things, bright light therapy and bupropion, which is the prescription medication that's probably the first to start in seasonal affective disorder, can trigger a manic episode. And we want to avoid those. So if you have that pre-existing diagnosis, don't try bright light therapy, see a mental health professional. But if you don't, you do want to try light therapy, again, for the 30 minutes, 10,000 lux, 2 feet from your head, first thing in the morning, and give it a couple of weeks. And I like people to assess their mood on a 1 to 10 scale and the different components of what it is that is disabling for them, whether it's fatigue or anxiety or too much sleeping or even carb craving, which is seems to be specific for seasonal affective disorder in the realm of depression. So 1 is the least possible and 10 is the most possible. And you rate yourself at the beginning, and then 2 weeks later, you pull out your ratings from the drawer and or your phone, and then you enter your new ratings. So this self-rating gives you a little trial, and we don't use those therapeutic trials enough in medicine. As a pharmacist, I don't know if you agree with that, but it is really helpful in knowing what you're doing is working or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, there's the bupropion that you mentioned, and there's honestly a Me Too drug that I think is one of the dumbest Me Too drugs of all time, because they didn't even bother to change the drug. They just changed the salt of it. And so bupropion hydrochloride is Wellbutrin that has been used for a long time. It's now generic. And so drug company was like, well, let's make a hydrobromide version. And it boggles my mind. And to your point, we don't do enough to truly assess how does the patient feel while on our therapy, be it light therapy, be it a medication, be it forest bathing, like whatever it is that we're doing. And, you know, you mentioned that activation of mania or hypomania is possible. But we also know that these medications, the bupropions, can also increase blood pressure, cause problems with our eyesight as far as causing glaucomas. You know, we got a black box warning on basically every antidepressant out there for suicidal thoughts. And so, And it also it also gets used for people who are trying to quit smoking and has really bad side effects like seizures, and the list just goes on and on and on. So I love what you said about try the light therapy first before you go straight down the medication rabbit hole. And if you are going to go down the medication rabbit hole, be sure that you're giving yourself like at least a solid 2 months before you decide if the medication is working or is not working for you, because antidepressants are slow acting drugs. They takes a long period of time. And I personally am a much bigger fan of using specific probiotics that can help you to increase serotonin, decrease cortisol, increase dopamine, all of those things, as well as using amino acids that can shift you towards the production of melatonin at the correct time of day. Because, you know, you saying doing the bright light therapy first thing in the morning, in my mind, I'm like, okay, that's also going to help to trigger those high levels of cortisol in the morning when we're supposed to have high levels of cortisol, helping to reset that circadian rhythm. Now, you are such an interesting physician because you are an internist, but you also profoundly understand how everything is connected. And so you're a physician, but you're also a chef, and you also run a certified organic educational farm that is biodiverse and regenerative. And so tell us, you know, what on earth, tell us how you got to where you are now having a career as an organic farmer.
Well, in 25 words or less?
No, you can tell us, the 5 minute version. Go for it.
No, well, I just see it as a continuum, Lindsay, sort of as you have become an important voice in media and in giving women some power back about their health and understanding not just medication, but the way that their bodies work. What I'm trying to do is connect people these days to how the outside world works and affects their brain and body and how it can make them feel better without necessarily using medication, or at least as an adjunct to it, whether they're anxious and depressed, as we've been talking about here, or whether they have diabetes or heart disease, or whether they just need to feel connected to the world around them. And so the best advice I ever got about careers, by the way, was to add them instead of change them.
Mm-hmm.
So I became an internist, and then I trained as a medical ethicist, and then I went to cooking school and taught cooking, and eventually did some TV around cooking and culinary medicine, which is a field I helped to invent in medicine. And now we're working on nature-based medicine so that the farm actually is educational in that way. It teaches people who come here not only how things grow, but where they're from and how they relate to not just the earth, but also to the other animals and insects and production around them. So I'm lucky to be able to sort of walk the talk, and that's how I learn best, by trying to and failing often. Grow things and cook things and even use, as I mentioned, therapeutic trials for not just medication, and you mentioned forest bathing, but also for almost any kind of intervention, because the body does have a great capacity to heal itself and to stay well and become younger physiologically. And what I'm most interested in is giving people back that power, mm-hmm. the power to control their own lives in ways that they don't suspect and that you can't know about if you're surrounded by four walls every day and you can't see out the window, mm-hmm. or if you can only see out the window and see fear or the unknown.
So there's so many conflicting opinions out there on what to eat, how to eat, when to eat, all of the things. And, you know, I think about people like Dave Asprey, who's just got brilliant marketing, but it's always very like, it's always very confrontational. And he's always telling people how Kale is trying to kill you. And I'm just like, bro, slow your roll. But one of the things I love, you wrote a book called Chef MD's Big Book of Culinary Medicine. And culinary medicine is the art of cooking blended with the science of medicine. And the thing that I loved as I was reading more about it is you discover what and how to eat for different medical conditions. ADHD may have one approach, Alzheimer's disease may have another approach, rheumatoid arthritis, gut ulcers, because, you know, I've been teaching my pharmacy student all month, we got to get people to not go down that aisle with all the proton pump inhibitors and the H2RA drugs that are just destroying our health and well-being. And so talk to us about just, what is culinary medicine first? And then I would love to hear your opinions about how you approached cooking and recipe development for different disease states.
So culinary medicine, as you said, Lindsay, blends the art of cooking with the science of medicine to create restaurant quality meals to help to prevent and treat disease. And my friend Michael Roizen, who is head of the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute, and I taught the first class in it at the State University of New York in Syracuse, not quite 20 years ago. And now it's taught in over 50% of medical schools. And the idea behind it is that food should taste delicious, but also work for you if you want to lower your cholesterol or improve your irritable bowel syndrome or reduce your risk for a heart attack or have less arthritis pain or simply more energy and better ways of sleeping. Mm-hmm. So that's a science that is beginning to have some meat on it. And I'm really happy that there are lots of models for this and people are up and running with it everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I feel lucky to have so many colleagues in it. And I think that the more we learn about it, the more we'll have direct answers to the question of what do you eat for that? Mm-hmm. Which is a question I get asked a lot as a doctor.
Yeah. So what are some of your basic cooking principles? You know, what are, I feel like there's so much that's vilified out there. You know, we talked with Dr. Joan Iflin, who wrote the textbook, the first ever textbook on processed food addiction. It's just everywhere, all around us. And I think fat gets vilified, salt gets vilified, certainly sugar gets vilified. And to some extent, that's a valid thing. So before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors. There are some days where you are just not in the mood. You lack motivation, and when you aren't in a good mood and you lack motivation, you are less likely to get out and exercise, which affects your metabolism. There is a supplement that I love that is specifically designed to put you in a better mood with more motivation and over time support better metabolism. It's called Amare Edge, and it combines 3 powerful ingredients that have not been used in any other supplement. There is mango leaf, which has fast-acting mental energy that gives you laser-level focus, better clarity, and accelerates learning. It also helps to improve our workouts and our recovery. Lychee fruit decreases fatigue and, over time, improves endurance. It also is a powerful transformer of your metabolism because it can reduce belly fat over time and has anti-aging benefits such as fewer wrinkles and less brown spots. Then we have palm fruit, which synergizes the effect of the mango leaf and the lychee fruit, and it supports the body's ability to regenerate neurons. Between now and April 14th, you can get a free product credit to get edge. Head over to lindseyelmore.com/amare and get started as either a customer or a partner with a subscribe and save order of $129.95 or more, and you will get a free $70 product of edge as well as a free reboot. If you have already shopped with Amare, just use the code MOTIVATION on any $200 or more order. You'll get a free edge when you spend $250 or more. So if you're brand new, head to lindseyelmore.com/Amare. Use the code EDGE on any order over $129.95. And if you have shopped with me before, use the code MOTIVATION to get a free edge and free shipping when you spend $250 or more. And now, let's get back to the show. What are some of your foundational principles about what to eat?
So it's such a simple question. And let me try to give a simple answer. I think what to eat ought to resemble what it looks like in nature. Mm-hmm. I think eating whole foods of almost any kind is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you can never have a bowl of cereal. It doesn't mean that that bread is bad, or I don't like vilifying foods because I think there is room under the tent for everything. We evolved that way as a species. And the way that I think about how to choose what to eat increasingly is twofold. One, sort of about your ancestry. How did your ancestors eat? I think the Blue Zones program has done this really well in identifying characteristics among centenarians who also have lived very high quality lives. That's basically a plant-based diet, but it's not exclusively so. Many of those communities eat fish and cheese and even meat, but it's more of a side dish. Although I think there's also great virtue to eating naturally grown protein sources, whether it's bison or beef or chicken or fish. I like to give, when I start with a patient, I like to ask them how they choose what to eat. I'm more interested in what their life patterns are like than like exactly what they had, because it will tell me how much pressure they're under and whether they're able to savor food. Mm-hmm. So I think savor is the missing ingredient in a lot of people's eating styles. Mm-hmm. And if we learn to really appreciate flavor, color and texture and form and aroma, then eating becomes a little easier because it's about pleasure. Mm. And the healthfulness comes with the pleasure of it. So I think for many people, from the most recent research, if you can eat in an 8 or 6 hour window, you probably will improve your insulin sensitivity. And most of us increasingly are insulin resistant in some ways. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of one big principle to try to confine your eating to a smaller window. It also lets you snack on foods that are not really good for you less. Mm-hmm. I eat whole vegetables and whole fruits and lots of nuts. And I'm making dinner for a date on Saturday night, and I'm roasting a chicken and making a mole for her. And the mole is a sauce that I made for many years at Topolobampo in Chicago, working with Rick Bayless. And in Mexico, the sauces are all fruits and nuts and seeds and vegetables. They're not butter and flour and cream. And there's nothing wrong with a French sauce like that, a little bit of hollandaise on something. It's not going to kill you. I think we're too anxious about food. Mm-hmm. I think we've forgotten to really love it and enjoy it. And that's true for a lot of things about nature as well. It's one of the reasons I think we young people especially are so anxious. We don't know how to focus anymore. We don't know how to be calm. Mm. Our social media and digital media go like this. Mm-hmm. And so I like people often to read books, because when you read a book, you have to be a little patient. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to anticipate what comes to the next page. Mm-hmm. And that might sound crazy, like you can get everything in your phone. What do I need a book for? Mm-hmm. But actually, it helps you. It helps to calm your brain.
Well, and it's just like me. So I taught an event last weekend, and I always encourage people, like, put your phone away. You're really not going to look back at photos of these slides. And I have a choice. Right now, I could be typing notes, but I would much rather be writing them on a piece of paper, because it's how our brain was evolutionarily structured to learn. Our brain learns differently putting a pen to paper than it does digitally. And I love what you said about being too anxious about food. It reminds me so much of the writings of Jeanine Roth.
Yes, that's right. I love her.
I love her too.
What's a refrigerator? Her refrigerator book?
If you're going to eat out of the refrigerator, pull up a chair.
Exactly.
Because she's all about, like, don't eat out of the skillet, don't eat directly out of the refrigerator, but if you're going to, pull up a chair. Because
exactly.
Yeah. She has six principles for eating, and I probably will not be able to name all six of them, but eat with the intention of being in full view of others. Eat while seated. Eat without distractions, such as phones, computers, TV, angry conversation, loud music, even newspapers and things. She's just like, just eat without distractions. Focus on what's on your plate. And her sixth principle is exactly what you were saying. Eat with gusto. Eat with pleasure. Eat with the idea. In her book, Women, Food, and God, she's so great because she says, look, your whole relationship to yourself is right there on the plate in front of you. And I think it's so brilliant to think about, man, what I feed myself is a reflection of how much I care about myself and the world.
So great. I actually used to give her refrigerator book to patients. I bought like 20 of them at a time. And I would just hand them to people and say, please go read this. Come back. We'll talk about it in your next appointment. Mm-hmm. And it can be frustrating for people to hear this. We should acknowledge that, mm-hmm. because they just want to know what, just tell me what to eat and let me do it and we're done. And actually that can work for a while. Like, I could tell you what to eat. For Dr. Oz, I made this acronym called BITES, mm-hmm. berries, Indian spices, tea, eggs, and spice, and Indian spices. See, I forgot, and salmon.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, there we go. Those are five anti-inflammatory foods. Include them every day. You'll be more healthy, and it's true. You will. Mm-hmm. If you drink half a bottle of whiskey, it won't balance out.
I know. I tell patients all the time, you can out-eat, undersleep, and overstress, and out-drink any drug, any healthcare practice, anything. You can just, if you keep pouring the toxins in, it can always offset.
Nature's a good antidote to that.
Yeah.
We should say that. Okay, getting outside every day, what you and I were talking about before.
Right.
Getting outside and walking resets your cortisol level, allows your brain to make chemicals that allow you to relax, actually lowers your blood pressure and your pulse. Mm. Just 10 minutes does this. The best dose is probably 30, but 10 minutes you see a change in cortisol level, the stress hormone. And that's because you're using the side of your brain that is not about numbers. It's about senses. Mm-hmm. And experiencing nature like you do when you're fighting seasonal affective disorder because you're outside is part of appreciating your senses. And the way that I remember this is to listen, touch, see, smell, and taste. Mm. So you walk down your face, you touch your ears, and you touch next to your eyes, and then you touch next to your nose and to your mouth, and the very touch itself is is a tactile sense. So those are your five senses, and you're using them when you're outside. And if you rotate through your senses, you actually are in it and outside of your troubles, in something bigger than yourself. Your anxiety starts to go away. Your depression starts to go away. As I said, your blood pressure and pulse both drop. It's amazing.
I completely agree. I have a very, very active Hungarian Vizsla, and she's only 17 months old, so she's not even fully out of her puppy stage, because dogs that are active like her tend to mature much more slowly. And there are some mornings that I do not want to go out and go on a walk with her. But every single time, it's undeniable that I feel better by the time it's done. And, you know, we talked with Dr. Casey Means on the show. Her research with continuous glucose monitors has shown that as little as 2 minutes of walking after a meal can blunt your glycemic load. Your insulin doesn't spike as high. Your glucose doesn't spike as high. As little as 2 minutes is all that it takes. And so, you know, have there been specific studies of how nature impacts pain or eyesight or your immune system?
Oh, there certainly have. Actually, there are well over 1,000 in the peer-reviewed medical literature, but they haven't really been gathered yet in a way that I think other clinicians are beginning to notice them and make sense of them. I'm a fan of Dr. Means' work, by the way, mm-hmm. and I think continuous glucose monitoring is a really powerful tool. We're going to see that more on smartphones, for example, mm-hmm. and watches, we already are. So yes, the very first study that has been cited 5,000 times by Roger Ulrich at Texas A&M then at the time, showed that patients on either side of a hospital hallway who had had a cholecystectomy, their gallbladder out, which in 1979 you needed to be in the hospital for, had less pain, took fewer narcotics, had better hospital stays according to the nurses, and were more satisfied if they had a view of the trees outside instead of a view of a brick wall being on the two sides. So those patients were contrasted in a retrospective way. But the study was so powerful that it actually changed hospital design and architecture. So you need a view of nature to have less pain. Your immune system, we began to talk about forest bathing, which is a guided and important way, can be self-guided, to utilize your senses, as we just talked about. And remember the quick way that I went through them, all five of them. You spend 1 minute each under a forest canopy. Actually, in the best research has been done by a guy named Dr. Lee, L-I, in Tokyo, who teaches at the Tokyo Medical School, who found that taking executives into the forest for a couple of hours, not 5 minutes, but a couple of hours, and just having them go literally a quarter mile, appreciating the things around them, not talking very much, not trying to get any exercise per se, allowed their natural killer cells, which are white blood cells that are activated to eat up cancer cells in your body, to eat up deformed cells and other bad cells that can exacerbate immune problems. And those immunes, they had higher natural killer cells levels after just those 2 hours in the forest. And that effect lasted all month.
Wow.
They had better immunity just after spending 2 hours in the forest, not doing anything except being. And people think it might be the phytoncides, which are the aromatic chemicals that are released from leaves that allow trees to communicate and often can even fend off predators. We're not sure why that is, but the immune system probably is the key for why nature acts as powerfully as it does. And then thirdly, I think you mentioned eyesight. There's a public health initiative in Singapore and in East Asian countries that asks that parents take their kids outside to play because they are trying to reverse the epidemic of myopia, of nearsightedness. 80 to 90% of kids in Southeast Asia are myopic. And in California, where I live, it's about 40%. And it's thought to be exactly what you mentioned, mm-hmm. that the use of screens makes young eyes, and in some cases like mine, older eyes, focus right up front and not far away. Mm-hmm. Because 2 hours a day over the week, and then 6 to 12 weeks, according to the research, allows that myopia not just to slow, but even reverse in many children. Mm-hmm. And that's such powerful outside medicine, natural wellness, nature-based medicine, that even taking yourself away from your screen and looking at the horizon. And for kids, that's often has to do with free play and not confined play or play inside or play even in the backyard. Mm-hmm. So those three concrete examples are easy ways to get well with nature and to improve your health easily and with some fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you wonder, can we fake it till we make it? You know, I look at some of the brilliant interventions that have been done in Dutch nursing homes where they install what appears to be a transformative scene where it's morning, noon, and night, and where they took and painted, you know, very good nature scenes or put up photography of nature scenes. So does our brain, can we truly fake it till we make it? Like if hospitals don't have the ability to put windows in every patient's room, can they just put up photos of trees and trigger this same reaction?
You know, that's been done, and it's been done with AV projections. There's a hospital in Texas that's being constructed with a 70-inch monitor of changing nature scenes in its waiting room. Mm-hmm. I think every clinician ought to have posters of either a meadow or a forest or of running water in his or her office, because those three, according to great interior design and graphic design studies, are the most calming scenes for most people. Think about how anxious you are when you go see the doctor.
Yeah, no.
It's a white coat hypertension thing for real. Mm-hmm. So the answer is yes, that does improve some parameters that are physiologic. Mm-hmm. Is it as good as being outside? No. But does it help to bring the outside in, where you are reminded that you are a small part of something bigger, and that something bigger can be both really interesting and can make your world larger and more fun? Mm-hmm. Yes. So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of bringing the outside in, because it's a bridge to actually exploring the creativity and fun of nature.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You make me want to go get, I just got a new plant for my birthday. It was just like a couple days ago, and a couple people sent me new plants, and I'm like, I'm going to bring a new plant in here. I've got a couple that are off camera, but you know, just even more, just bring in more.
Even more. Yeah. Some of my friends, I'm friends with Plant Ma on Instagram, and she at one point had 600 in her little Brooklyn apartment.
Wow.
And there are, and even more people surround themselves. And I think this is fascinating. I love it. I have a couple behind me, as you can see. And my friend Bruce at the Santa Barbara Farmers Market of Santa Ynez Gardens on Saturday is the most popular guy. Mm-hmm. There are 40 other people with exotic produce that some of which is gorgeous and really flavorful. I'm there most Saturdays. Bruce is the most popular guy. He is selling succulents to millennials, mm-hmm. and inside office plants, inside home plants. And he does it with love and generosity. And he is easily the most popular guy at the farmer's market.
Well, and we've talked with Dr. Vivian Chen on the show about how oftentimes our indoor air quality is worse than outdoor air quality. And there are so many plants that can help to offset all of the off-gassing that's coming from our carpets and our bedding and our curtains and all of these things. And so get some plants in your house, people. Okay, so you described nature deficit disorder, which I'm guessing is exactly what it sounds like. But talk to us about the risks of having the absence of a comfortable natural spot.
Well, nature deficit disorder was described by Richard Louv in 2005. He's a journalist who described it in children as a social problem, where kids were getting outside so little because their parents had stranger danger worries, and because they needed to focus on the monitors and so on. I think nature deficit disorder is actually a medical problem for adults. And seasonal affective disorder is a result of nature deficit disorder, not getting outside enough so that it causes medical problems. Mm-hmm. That's what nature deficit disorder is in adults. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody knows what comfort food is, and almost everybody has at least one comfort food. It's cultural, it's gender specific, it's fascinating and wonderful. I gave a talk about this at the University of Chicago, and I showed different comfort foods from around the world. There are lots of oohs and ahs, and there should be, because comfort food is great. Mm-hmm. Comfort nature place is also great. Mm-hmm. It's a place you go where you can relieve stress. Mm-hmm. Think of when you were growing up. Is there a place that you could go outside that you always felt like everything was going to be okay, that it was beautiful and you were immersed, that you didn't want to leave because you felt embraced? Well, that's a comfort nature place. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people may not have that memory, or may not have been exposed to that, or not sure anymore because they haven't been there in a while. So we created comfortnaturequiz.com, which gives you the dozen most common comfort nature places. And we'll send you an MP3 free, a little audio clip of the top three choices for you. And it takes 2 minutes to answer. It asks you about what's comforting to you. It's just an idea that we want to connect people to nature in a way that is more personal than we've felt. Mm-hmm. You often feel like nature is like the Grand Canyon or the Rocky Mountains or the Pacific Ocean, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. Nature is that Vizsla in back of you. It's the wind that ruffles your curtains. It's the lettuce in your salad. It's all around you.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And just taking a moment to pause. And my friend Jody Cohen and I was just talking with Dr. Nick Allen, the power that we have in controlling our emotional response, the power is in the pause. Pause and take a moment to acknowledge that salad is a living, breathing thing. The wind is alive within us and around us. And so, you know, talk to us as we finish out, because I'm sure some of our listeners are listening, and my amazing videographer and website designer posted on her Instagram story that she was out of town for 5 days. She lives in rural Minnesota, and she shoveled snow from like 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. so that she would be prepared to go out. And yeah, you're in Santa Barbara. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. No. So what about people that live in really harsh environments? Whether it's extremely hot, like my brother that lives down in Arizona, or whether it's extremely cold, like our northern friends, or people who live in huge cities, you know, as someone who lived in New York for a long time, you know, like you're surrounded by a lot of concrete and a lot of exhaust. And so what about people that live in tough environments? How can they be more proficient in getting doses of nature all throughout the day?
I'm totally empathetic to that. I lived in Chicago for 16 years. Good for your friend for shoveling her own snow. I'm not sure why it was at 3 a.m, but she probably had to get out and go to work. I mean, yeah. I lived in a little coach house surrounded by other buildings. I did have a rooftop tomato garden, but that was because I was crazy. I mean, I think that, as I said, nature doesn't have to be the Grand Canyon. It doesn't have to be our homes where we are. It can be and ought to be the house plant on your desk. It can be natural fibers making up your flooring and window curtains. It can be and ought to be a little herb garden in a window that with rosemary in it, because rosemary is impossible to kill, and mint the same way. That will survive even in winter. And as we emerge from winter, we're going to get more light and more warmth, and we'll be able to grow things outside. Growing anything connects you not just to your food, but to nature, and makes you part of the process, so that you can be not just grateful for where we are, but also share what we have with others, which is a big part of nature that I think people underestimate. Nature is actually social. You run into people when you're outside. And even if you're outside for 10 minutes walking the dog, running into people reminds you that you're not alone in the world. So having some part of bringing nature in and having reminders of that, I think, is a powerful way for people to stay connected. And then once the weather warms up a bit, the park down the street, the street tree itself, you know, when the beginning of the pandemic, the birds actually came back. People thought that there was a different bird down in Manhattan than there were, but no, you could just hear them because there weren't cars. And that's really amazing. So it tunes your sense of observation if you can bring nature in, because you'll be aware of it when you go outside.
Absolutely. So much changed in New York City during COVID. We saw the Hudson River come back to life. You know, the Hudson River used to be one of the most fertile breeding grounds for oysters, and there haven't been oysters in the Hudson River in God only knows how long. It was one of the most important food sources for Native Americans who lived in that area, and we just saw so much come back to life. And so, Dr. John LaPuma, it has been such an honor to talk to you. Listeners, he is offering us two free downloadable mini ebooks. If you head to lindseyelmore.com, cooking the real age way, as well as lindseyelmore.com/metagenics, you can download two free ebooks. The first is called Cooking the Real Age Way. The second one is called A Green RX, How to Look, Feel, and Actually Be Less Stressed, Healthier, and Happier. And when you head to lindseyelmore.com/metagenics, you can save up to 15% for all new customers on items. Dr. John LaPuma, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your wisdom with us today on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Lindsay, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I get it. You want to be healthy, but you're done with temporary solutions and fad diets and crazy exercise programs. You don't know where to find good, reliable health education, or even what wellness options are out there. And goodness knows there's not enough time in the day to get to the gym, cook healthily, and do all of the things. That's why I created Wellness Made Simple. It's a place where you can learn practical skills that you need to build a healthy lifestyle. On-demand courses help you to find healthcare practices that work for you, because there is not one simple way to be healthy. All you have to do is head to wellnessmadesimple.us and get access to on-demand content, more than 85 videos, more than 11 hours of education, and we are continually adding more content. You then go watch the courses, show up for our live calls so that you can learn the major functions and dysfunctions of the body and understand how to heal yourself. Then you'll implement daily changes that positively transform your health so that you feel better. Because you are a gracious podcast listener, you are being offered a special extension for 1 week only. You can get 1 month free in Wellness Made Simple when you shop the code podcast. Head over to wellnessmadesimple.us and shop the code podcast to get 1 month free to functional medicine education that is simple and easy to understand and genuinely builds wellness. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag at Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.